having sound taxation policies, and
Okay.
remembering that it's not government's money, it's our money, it's the
I
people's
understand.
money that we spend
And,
on.
and
Now, those messages of stewardship, those messages of
okay. I'm
stewardship
sorry to
need to
interrupt you,
be
but
emphasised.
Manchester has truncated this segment. I apologise for that. But just briefly, let me ask both of you very quickly. You first, Alan Duncan. Would a change of leader help?
Absolutely not. All it would do would, I think, undermine everything. It would be very counterproductive. Strangely enough, I think the same is probably also true of the Labour Party.
Right. But that's
not my passion. I hope your cold gets better.
Robert Buckland?
Yeah, it's self-indulgent nonsense. For the Tory party to turn in on itself again would be a huge mistake. Let's remember, let's focus on the people.
OK, we got the message. Neither of you want a change of leader. That's something to cheer Kemi Badenoch up as she prepares ahead for Manchester. That's it for me today here on Times Radio. We'll bring you everything as it happens on this terrorist attack in Manchester. I'll be back on Monday. But up next on Times Radio, it's Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you very much, Andrew. Good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. You are listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio.
And between now and 4 o'clock, we will, of course, have the latest information from Manchester as it comes in. Also on the programme today, the Times defence editor, Larissa Brown, talks about the defence summit that's happening in Copenhagen, now without Sir Keir Starmer, as he is making his way back to the UK to chair a COBRA meeting. A self-styled African tribe has finally been evicted from its campsite in the Scottish Borders. We'll try to find out exactly what they were doing there in the first place. And Ken Follett's latest tome is all about Stonehenge, and he's our big guest just after 3:30.
All of that happens after the very latest news from Stuart Willey.
Fee, thank you. Good afternoon. Police in Manchester say two people have died in a suspected terror attack on a synagogue. Three others have been seriously injured. Emergency services were called this morning to reports of a car being driven at worshippers and the stabbing of a security guard. Witnesses recorded distressing scenes in the moments before police opened fire on the suspect.
Everybody else, he has a bomb. Go away.
He's got a bomb on him.
He's now thought to be dead, but Greater Manchester Police say that can't yet be confirmed because of suspicious items on him. The King says he's deeply shocked by the horrific attack, while the Prime Minister has returned early from a European summit to chair a COBRA emergency committee meeting. Sir Sadiq Khan, the Mayor of London, says many Jewish people are scared.
I also know many want to go to the synagogue and worship. I want to reassure them that in London they will be seeing additional police officers. People should be allowed to go about and practice their faith, knowing they're going to be safe. Unfortunately, too many Jewish Londoners, Jewish people across the country, Jewish people across the globe don't feel that way, and that's heartbreaking.
The attack comes on Yom Kippur, Judaism's most holy day, a solemn day of fasting and prayer when many attend synagogue. Rafi Bloom from Jewish charity The Fed was on his way to the affected synagogue when the attack happened. He told Times Radio, hatred of Jews has been allowed to go unchecked.
It's incredibly personal. I was there last night praying. People that I know, friends of mine, were inside. The rabbi is a good friend of mine. And it's a shocking day, but sadly a day that we all knew would come to pass.
In other news, the Health Secretary has ordered an urgent review into the vetting of doctors after the Times found that some who were banned from practicing elsewhere are working in the NHS. The investigation found 22 clinicians who faced restrictions overseas. This woman's mother was discharged from hospital by one of them.
She was struggling to breathe in the car. So I wound the window down a bit and I said, look, Mum, we need to go back. And she said, no, I'm not going back. They've said there's nothing wrong. I'm going home. And then that night she passed away.
20 arrests have been made as part of an operation to crack down on people smuggling. Suspected gang members are accused of bringing people into the UK on small boats. One man is alleged to have risked the lives of 98 people after fitting them on a flimsy dinghy. And there are calls for the Chancellor to sharpen the UK's competitive edge in the upcoming autumn budget. A report by the British Chambers of Commerce suggests the country has fallen from the ninth most financially attractive nation in 1997 to 29th now. It wants Rachel Reeves to scrap measures which deter investment. For a roundup of the news on demand, subscribe to the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Well, if you've been listening to the bulletin and following the news throughout the morning and throughout lunchtime, you'll know that there has been a terrible incident in Manchester today. That's where we'll go in just a couple of moments' time. Elsewhere on the programme, we'll also be discussing the rights of refugees, and we will talk about the European Defence Summit in progress. The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, is flying back from that in Copenhagen because of what's happened in Manchester this morning. But there's a lot riding on discussions with European neighbours at the moment, so we will consider that agenda too. Also, after 3 o'clock this afternoon, a self-appointed and really rather relatively recently self-formed tribe has been living in a Scottish forest, but no longer. They're out and about, and we'll discuss that one too. And after 3:30, Jane has read a tome. We welcome a legend.
It is the one, the only Ken Follett. Circle of Days is Ken's new book. It is about Stonehenge, and Fee, you just can't argue with these figures. He has sold more than 197 million copies of his 38 novels.
Well, coffee's on him then.
Yes, it would be nice, wouldn't it? This is a goodie. If you've enjoyed Pillars of the Earth, his epic, epic novel about the construction of a medieval church, and so many people have, then Circle of Days is about Stonehenge. And I just think it's fascinating. The steps, for example, that the people living on the Wiltshire Plain at the time took to avoid too much inbreeding. Ken is going to explain all that after 3:30. We'll also find out the role of the priestess in our prehistory and why the human population at the time was allergic to cow's milk. They never went near it. So Ken Follett with us after 3:30 this afternoon.
Let's go straight to our top story today then. Two people have died following this stabbing and ramming attack on a synagogue in Manchester. Police say another three people are still in a very serious condition. Greater Manchester Mayor Andy Burnham spoke in the immediate aftermath of the attack.
It is a serious incident, I have to say. It is in the area that you mentioned. And I would say to people listening, firstly, to avoid the area because it is a serious incident. But at the same time, I can give some reassurance immediately to people that the immediate danger appears to be over, and Greater Manchester Police have dealt with it very quickly, and has been amazing support from, I think, members of the public and security at the location. But what I will do, Mike, is give more factual information as the hot seat develops, if that's okay. But I can obviously give people that immediate reassurance not to worry too much. The situation has been dealt with very effectively by those on site and by Greater Manchester Police.
Well, Raphael Bloom attends the synagogue and spoke to Andrew Neil earlier.
I was on my way there this morning when I received a call to say that there had been a terrorist attack, and to stay away and to tell my family to stay away. So for me, it's incredibly personal. I was there last night praying. People that I know, friends of mine, were inside. The rabbi is a good friend of mine. And it's a shocking day, but sadly a day that we all knew would come to pass.
Well, the local MP, Graham Stringer, gave his reaction to Hugo Rifkin.
I know the synagogue really well. I used to live around the corner from it. I've been to services there, I've done hustings there, just know many of the congregation by first names. It's appalling. And basically, that synagogue and the other synagogues in the area go out of their way to improve relationships with the Muslim community. And that's reciprocated. It is just that there are a small number of extreme people who want to destroy those good relationships, and as well as killing people and damaging the purpose of this attack is to damage those relationships. And in Manchester, of course, sadly, we have had the bomb in 2017 and other attacks. We will not allow those relationships to be destroyed.
Well, let's get the very latest with Alex Dibble, who's Times Radio's Deputy Head of News. Alex, what more can you tell us?
Well, in the last hour, a loud explosion has been heard at the scene of this incident. We knew that the bomb disposal unit has been there for a couple of hours. Police say that they have been unable to confirm the death of the suspect due to suspicious items on his person. And indeed, also in the last hour or so, a picture has emerged of the suspect with white bags hanging from his belt, which are suspected of forming part of a bomb. It's unsure if the explosion that was heard in the last hour was the explosion of that device or the explosion of a separate device. And indeed, the suspect's death has still not been confirmed by official sources. We've also had no update on the three victims who previously we were told, as you mentioned a moment ago, were in a serious condition.
Are we expecting further updates from the police? And of course, we have seen in recent incidents of violence how necessary it is for the police to tell the public as much as they possibly can about what's happening to prevent the spread of an awful lot of other stuff very quickly on social media.
As much as they can and as early as they can. We have been appreciative of the speed at which Greater Manchester Police have released information today. We expect that to continue for the reasons you've just described. Police forces can sometimes in these instances give significant updates in press conferences. At the moment, there is nothing like that scheduled. I should say as well, the Manchester Evening News is reporting that a number of hospitals in Greater Manchester are now in lockdown. They have seen an internal note that's been shared by the Northern Care Alliance, which said that all of its sites have been asked to immediately lock down. Those hospitals include the Salford Royal, Fairfield General, Rochdale Infirmary and Royal Oldham. Greater Manchester Integrated Care Partnership, meanwhile, which represents NHS and care organisations in the area, has urged people to stay away from A&E unless their condition is life-threatening. And they say that this will help us prioritise care for the most in need and ensure emergency teams can respond effectively to what happened outside the synagogue.
Right. There has also been increased security, heightened security immediately at synagogues and schools across Manchester and across the country.
That's correct. Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, confirmed that as he also confirmed that he was flying back to the UK early from this defence summit in Copenhagen and would be chairing a COBRA meeting, an emergency COBRA meeting. And he said that more assets, more security would be made available to synagogues across the UK.
Can you just remind us of what happened earlier on this morning? Because it is due to a member of the public being incredibly diligent and moving at speed to report to the police something they believed that was suspicious, that has undoubtedly meant that this is an incident that isn't as bad. I mean, it's horrendous, but it isn't as bad as it might have been.
The timeline is quite remarkable simply for how quickly everything unfolded. So the police received a call at 9:31 a.m. from this member of the public that you mentioned. Within seconds, they were dispatching armed officers to the scene. They declared Plato, which is a code word meaning a marauding terror attack, moments later. At 9:38, so this is 7 minutes after they first received the call, firearms officers discharged their weapons. Incredible. And Greater Manchester Police have made a point of thanking the member of the public for the speed at which they made that call.
So Alex is going to keep across this for us this afternoon. We'll bring you the very latest as we get it. So do stay tuned to Times Radio. That takes us to 12 minutes past two.
You are listening to Times Radio. Are we able to talk to Sardar, who's a barber in his shop? No, that's not happening. Right, forgive me. Apologies for that. In the next couple of minutes, we're going to hear about the African tribe who was camping in the Scottish Borders. It came as a little bit of a shock to the good people of Jedburgh, but the members of the tribe, shall we say, well, two have been arrested. It's an interesting tale. It's not actually a funny one, if I'm honest. There could well be a very serious element to this. So we'll catch up with that story in a moment or two here on Times Radio. It's 13 minutes past two.
Hugo Rifkind, Monday to Thursday morning from 10 on Times Radio.
Prepare for a lively mix of illuminating conversation.
Is it just me that strikes me there's a whiff of nonsense about the deal?
Quality journalism, analysis and opinion that speaks for itself.
Even while it drags on and as horrifying as it is, it should have been a foreign policy triumph.
Plus unique perspectives on the day's news.
There seems to be a theme here, and that is that no one knows what's going on.
Hugo Rifkind, Monday to Thursday morning from 10 on Times Radio.
You never forget the dogs you've loved. They have the power to steal our hearts, to love us unconditionally, and be there for us when we need them most, without saying a word. You understand how a dog can change a life. A guide dog can transform the life of someone living with sight loss. Will you help change someone else's life with a gift in your will to guide dogs? Request our free will guide today. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide dogs. We travel to explore, to learn, to connect. At Viking, we believe travel should be more than just a trip. It should be a doorway to cultural insight and personal enrichment. Our itineraries are designed to help you explore and engage with your destination through its food, culture, and customs. Start planning your river, ocean, or expedition journey today. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SEG tariff.
Download the free Times Radio app from the App Store or Google Play today.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
So all news outlets and therefore us too are confirming that the suspect is dead. That has come from Manchester Police, and we will talk more about that in a couple of moments' time. There was a controlled explosion within the last hour because the suspect had been seen by witnesses and by the police to have devices on his person. So although he was originally shot at the scene at 9:38, as Alex told us a couple of moments earlier, it wasn't possible for the police to say that he was definitely dead, but that news just in to us. Let me tell you about the most read story on the Times website this afternoon. Number three, hectic sex lives explain why men die younger than women. Read that at your own pace somewhere. The second most read story, British tourists facing death penalty in Thailand for drug smuggling. And of course, the most read piece on the Times website is following the Manchester synagogue stabbing, two dead and suspect shot after attack. That is a live page constantly updated. You can read all of those articles on thetimes.com. You need your digital subscription. If you don't have one, get one. You just go to thetimes.com/subscribe.
Now, you should be made aware that there is a good new politics podcast from The Times and The Sunday Times. It's being launched today. It is called The State of It, and it features our political editors Stephen Swinford and Caroline Wheeler, along with the Whitehall editor Gabriel Pogrand and Patrick Maguire, our chief political commentator. They will bring you the inside story from the coalface of British politics. You can find it on YouTube and on all the usual podcast platforms. It is the Tory party conference, of course, next week. Kemi Badenoch has it all to do, and you can hear it here on Times Radio, full coverage on the station next week. Now let's go to the borders, the Scottish borders, and to the self-styled African tribe, which has been evicted from a camp near Jedburgh. Now, three people formed the Kingdom of Kabbalah. That's what they called themselves, and they were staying on council-owned land near the Scottish borders town. And in a very 2025 move, the group live-streamed their eviction on TikTok. Mark Horn is senior reporter for The Times in Scotland. Mark, what can you tell us about this group? Just the three people, a king and queen and somebody they called their handmaiden, is that right?
Yes, it's extremely bizarre. So we have King Atahenny, Queen Nandi, and they had also, as you suggest, their handmaiden, who basically acted as their servant and factotum. He claimed that he was the descendant of the biblical King David. He claimed he was the Messiah. He claimed that they were promised this land by God, that the Scottish borders were the new Zion, and that they were there to stay. It sounds fairly innocuous. I mean, if they were a pair of harmless eccentrics, all would be fine. But it's a bit more problematic than that. The third member of the camp, they called her, she refers to herself as Asnat, the handmaiden. In reality, she's a 21-year-old from Texas called Cora Taylor. Her family says she's missing. They claim she was brainwashed. They claim that these people are a cult and they want their daughter back in Texas.
What has been the reaction from the people of the town?
Well, to begin with, people were utterly bemused by it. They found it quite amusing. And as it went along, kind of people got more concerned when they found out the truth about these people. So King Atahene is actually a guy called Kofi Ethe. He's originally from Ghana. His wife is called Jean Gasho. She's originally from Zimbabwe. They previously lived in Stockton-on-Tees, in Teesside. And when they lived there, they were charged with child welfare offences. Those charges never came to court. The charges were dropped, but there's still concern about that.
Yeah. And you have to say that their living conditions were, well, somewhat challenging, weren't they?
Well, they were indeed. The king spent most of his days apparently outside the co-op in the nearby town of Jedburgh using their free Wi-Fi, which was not the most regal of pastimes.
No. Possibly not. Thank you very much, Mark. Mark Horne, senior reporter for The Times in Scotland. I've also had a quick word with Scott Hamilton, deputy leader of Scottish Borders Council and one of the Tory councillors representing Jedburgh and District. He explained the process of the eviction of the tribe.
The process of eviction has been quite a long process. Initially started when the group first arrived in the town back a number of months ago. And it was sort of seen as a sort of comical thing. It was sort of seen as, well, it'll last a week. And, you know, clearly we're now into October and it's lasted that length of time. So the council initially started the eviction process. The group then moved to another piece of land, which was not in council ownership. And so the landowner there began the eviction process. Subsequently, then they moved back onto council land. So we had to start the whole process over again. So it has been quite a lengthy, drawn-out affair.
And it's just three people we're talking about here.
Yes, three people. I mean, they have made online accusations that they have an army of 140,000, I think they were last quoted as saying, was arriving. They're still to arrive, and I very much doubt they ever will.
Now, they say that they are reclaiming stolen land. What is their argument exactly?
I think you could try and look into their argument and you could get yourself twisted in knots. I think the truth of the matter is they don't know the history of Scotland. They don't know the history of the United Kingdom. You know, they have said that their ancestors owned this land and then they were banished to Africa by, I think, Queen Elizabeth I. I mean, complete nonsense. That is not the case at all. We have a very proud history in Scottish borders. We have, you know, clans, the Border Reavers, that really held this territory. So we know our history very well and we know what they were saying was just nonsense.
Some people have found all this quite funny, but I think there are some, shall we say, sinister elements to what's been going on. I know that the authorities tried to speak to this self-styled king. Were you able to have a conversation with him or indeed with his wife, the Queen?
No, we weren't able to have a conversation. We had attempted on many occasions to interact with him. That was, you know, Adult Protective Services, social work, you know, and the police obviously were trying to make contact as well. They just rebutted us at every single chance. And, you know, effectively, if we could have had a conversation with them, I'm very sure we could have sorted this situation out. But, you know, they pushed it to the very maximum. And, you know, unfortunately, the community had to pay the price. And when I say they had to pay the price, you know, they've had, you know, huge media outlets coming around the little town, you know, interviewing people, you know, people coming from outside the region just to see this tribe. And that has really had a huge impact on our town. So, you know, we've had to pay a price for this. It hasn't been this great victory. But I think everybody's very relieved that we've got a great outcome now.
How have they been living?
They have been living, I would say, very much like a campsite. They have tents erected, did have tents erected. They have sort of picnic equipment, but most of their food and services were all being provided from people that were following them on social media. And, you know, we did put out a plea for local people to stop supporting them. And whilst that may sound a bit callous, in actual fact, it was an attempt to ensure that the people they were reaching out to would be the local authority. So it was people that were trained, professional and could understand to get to the bottom of this situation. So the local people of Jebra listened to that. Unfortunately, people from outside the town and indeed outside the region wouldn't heed that warning and continued to bring food and gifts to them.
Because some of these people were prepared to believe that they were indeed a lost tribe who'd had their land stolen by Queen Elizabeth I?
I think there is an element that maybe some people believe that. I think there was also a social media attention element to it. And, you know, if you aren't living with a situation like we were having to live with in Jebra, to many people they might thought, well, this could be quite a fun outing. This could be a nice trip to the Scottish borders and we'll pop in and see them. We'll get our photos taken and kind of have that lifestyle, you know. So I don't know necessarily if people were truly believing in them. I think they were just curiosity was perhaps maybe more the driver in that.
And where are they now?
So the two members have been arrested of that group, so they're obviously in the legal process and being processed that way, and another member is in an undisclosed location, and obviously whilst there is a police investigation going on, I couldn't comment on their location.
No, and we do have to be careful here. Some people are inclined to dismiss this as a little bit of a joke and frankly a bit of fun, but unfortunately there may well be more to it.
Absolutely. I think we have to be mindful that whilst they put an image on social media, I think we have to dive behind that and actually look, what does that mean? You know, there has been accusations regarding the Human Slavery Act, etc. So there's all these elements that have to be investigated thoroughly, and the police are well prepared to take that task forward.
And the people of Jebra are, on the whole, rather relieved, are they now?
Very much so. I think everybody I spoke to this morning was just saying, thank goodness we can get back to our day-to-day life. And I think that's just what we want. And, you know, we'd love to welcome more people to our town and more visitors. You know, please do come and visit us. We've got lovely historical buildings that we want to showcase. We don't want to be showcasing three people in a wood.
Right, he's doing his best there for the Jebra Tourist Board. That was the voice of Scott Hamilton, the deputy leader of Scottish Borders Council and one of the Tory councillors representing Jebra and District.
I thought he had a rather lovely and beautifully Scottish succinct turn of phrase there.
Yeah, he did. Did you know that the last really big thing to happen in Jebra was back in 1165?
When, fill me in. You're a little older than me.
Yes, when, very sadly, King Malcolm IV died there.
Right. Okay, thank you.
And it'd been relatively quiet, and now this.
Right, we're definitely getting our money's worth somehow. Now, you were going to fill us in on a couple of tidbits from the Saturday Times magazine, whilst I prepare to tell the group a little something about what's happening on the off-air podcast. Off
Excellent.
You go.
Okay, so normally on a Friday, it's our Friday, it's Thursday, we talk to Jane Mulcairns, who stubbornly remains associate editor of the Times magazine. It's always a cracking read, and Jane is always extraordinarily good at telling us what is in it every single week. And this week, I want to point you in the direction of a lovely, lovely encounter between Catlin Moran and the brilliant Kathy Burke. There are some people who are just really significant, I think, in the fabric of British cultural life, and I would put Kathy Burke right in there. I really would. She's authentic, she's funny, she's talented, and she has a really, really engaging encounter with Catlin Moran. They talk about all sorts of things, and Kathy discusses her memoir, which is coming out in a couple of weeks. Kathy had a really, really difficult childhood, and I'm so humbled, actually, by just hearing a little bit about it in this conversation. Her mum died, her dad was an alcoholic, and quite honestly, Kathy had to just go round to other people's houses and hope that somebody would take pity on her and give her a meal. And she's never forgotten it. She's never forgotten either the names of the people who were prepared to share what little they had with her. It's really lovely, and it's in the Times magazine this weekend.
Thank you for that. Now, on the podcast at the moment, we've been discussing condolence letters and how important they still are, even though for many of us, the news of the death of somebody is quite often conveyed on social media. We were a little bit worried that because that's happening, does it mean that people aren't writing letters of condolence anymore? Because they're wonderful things to receive when someone you love or know has died. And they're also really lovely things to write. And one of our fabulous listeners, Brony, managed to get her hands on an old book that was on her bookshelves called the Basildon Bond Book of Letters. Now, this was a book of letters, templates of letters brought out by the stationery manufacturer Basildon Bond for all kinds of events in your life. So you've got quite a detailed section on romantic letters. So there are four different versions of letters from a man proposing marriage and a woman turning down marriage, or a woman accepting marriage. And in fact, yeah, no, the four different versions are letter breaking off an engagement /relationship in brackets, numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4. Listen to the podcast if you'd like to hear those. But I'd just like to bring you one, which is a template of a letter of complaint about canteen food. It comes from the fictional Colin Rose. Dear Mr. Smith, I wish to draw your attention to the reduction in the standard of food provided by the company's canteen. I very much appreciated the well-prepared food which used to be available in the canteen. However, in the middle of March, the choice of dishes was cut from 4 to 2 and there was a marked deterioration in quality. I've tried the canteen periodically since then and have always been served overcooked, lukewarm food. The sharp decline in the number of staff using the canteen suggests to me that my criticisms are generally held. I would be grateful if you could explain to me why this decline in standards has occurred and whether the company intends to take steps to rectify the situation. Yours sincerely. Now, I would love for somebody to try out that letter on their staff canteen in its very formal font and see whether or not you get a reply back.
Not exactly socking it to them, is
no,
it?
No, but
really?
It's just, it's so wonderfully polite, but also just, it doesn't give any, I mean, these days you'd have a photograph of a hair sticking out of your soup, wouldn't you? And you'd just post that on Instagram. You'd do a terrible review on Trustpilot or TripAdvisor or something, and they'd go out of business the next day. So, happy times.
Do join the off-air community if you're so inclined. It is completely free to join. Great bunch of people all over the world sharing some of their life experiences. Well worth being a part of. I mean, I would say that, wouldn't I? But honestly, it's good. Off-air with Jane and Fee drops Monday to Thursday around about 6 o'clock. It's available in all good podcast shops. Right, much more on the terrible events in Manchester and all the big stories of the day here on Times Radio in the next 30 minutes or so after the headlines from Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker, this is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. Two people have been killed in an attack on a synagogue in Crumpsall in Greater Manchester. In the last half hour, police have also confirmed the suspect is dead. He was shot by armed officers, but there was a delay in verifying that he'd died because of suspicious items on his body. A bomb disposal unit has been at the scene. Three other people remain in a serious condition. The Prime Minister is flying home from a meeting with his European counterparts in Denmark to chair an emergency COBRA meeting. These people live nearby. They say it's devastating.
I don't know what goes through people's minds when they target innocent people. Obviously, everyone's panicked.
This is just horrendous today of all days, which is our Yom Kippur, the holiest day, which obviously the terrorist was aware of, which is why he came today.
Extra security has been deployed to synagogues across the country. In other news, 20 people suspected of smuggling have been detained as part of a crackdown on small boat crossings. It's part of a two-week nationwide intelligence-led operation. Dozens have died and hundreds are injured in Ethiopia after scaffolding collapsed at a religious festival. Authorities say the death toll could rise after the accident in a partially built church. And Celtic fans have called off a silent protest during their Europa League game at Parkhead tonight. Supporters have been invited to a meeting with the board on Monday to discuss the running of the club. Don't forget, you can set the Times News Briefing as your news service on Alexa.
This is Times Radio.
Growing a business takes a powerful team. People who think big, raise the bar, and smash expectations. People who are feeling at their best, not worried and waiting for healthcare. If you're ready to take your business to the next level, you need a team that's ready to deliver. Bupa helps your people to get health worries seen and sorted with fast access to expert advice, including GPs and physios. Your team will have fast help for muscle, bone, and joint problems, plus mental health services and cancer cover as standard, so they're ready for whatever life throws at them, at home and at work. Take your business further by building a happier, healthier and more motivated team. And as prevention is better than cure, your team will have access to our digital wellbeing services, including 1,500 gym classes, mindfulness programmes and expert content. That's better for your team and better for your business.
Get ready to power your growth with Small Business Health Insurance that powers your people. Let's get growing. Search Bupa Small Business.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like... and more like... feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
Get the day's politics, business and sport every weekday in breakfast from 6:30 a.m.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
John Pienaar will be here between 4 o'clock and 7. And it's a grim day, actually, John. And I know that you will have full coverage of the events in Manchester later on.
Yes, absolutely. Very, very much so. So we're looking at live pictures coming in. The cordon's up. It's full of investigating officers, crime scene investigators. I mean, that part of it is over, but the aftermath is just beginning. And so I'm going to be talking about the way people in the Jewish community now are feeling and thinking about their lives after this. And it's also worth reflecting on how this fits into a broader picture of the experience of Jewish people, Jewish communities in this country, who have been noticing and have been talking about a rise in anti-Semitism, which is a distinct phenomenon from the extreme of a terror attack. But I think it's worth reflecting on that at the same time while we're considering what happened today. So I'm going to be talking to a rabbi, I'm going to be talking to a representative of the Jewish community in Manchester, I'm going to be talking to Penny Morton, who wrote a report on anti-Semitism, Labour MP too, and much else besides. I'm also going to be talking to a Muslim, a man who has devoted a great deal of time and effort to building bridges between Muslims and Jews, because that is also, I think, part of this story. Because, you know, that community, the Jewish, the Islamic Muslim community, is also one that knows a great deal about persecution, about abuse and a rise in those things in recent times for a different reason. But to talk to someone who wants to reach across that divide and is doing a good deal to try to achieve that is helpful, I think, at this point, for lots of different reasons, as well as being really rather interesting.
Yeah, John, thank you very much. Next week you will be, relatively briefly, but you will be at the Tory conference, which is also in Manchester.
Yes, it is. So we're going to be, look, it's part of what we do. I'm going to be there. It's going to be interesting. You know, we're looking at a party in a spot, and we're talking about the government being in a spot, which is always a bigger story, but they are still the official opposition. Sometimes easy to forget that, but that's what they are. They're not extinct, and they will have their moment of attention, and actually rightly so they should.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much, and full coverage on Times Radio next week. Right, it is now 26 minutes to 3.
Let's have a recap on some of the voices we've heard so far today talking about what happened in Manchester this morning. Police have confirmed that the suspect in the synagogue attack is dead. An image of the man thought to be the attacker has been shared online in the last half an hour. The MP for the area, Graham Stringer, gave his reaction to the attack.
I know the synagogue really well. I used to live around the corner from it. I've been to services there, I've done hustings there, just know many of the congregation by first names. It's appalling. And basically, that synagogue and the other synagogues in the area go out of their way to improve relationships with the Muslim community. And that's reciprocated. It is just that there are a small number of extreme people who want to destroy those good relationships, and as well as killing people and damaging as well as killing people, the purpose of this attack is to damage those relationships. And in Manchester, because sadly we have had the bomb in 2017 and other attacks, we will not allow those relationships to be destroyed.
That is Graham Stringer, who was talking to Hugo Rifkind. Rafi Bloom is a member of the synagogue and spoke to Andrew Neil on the Times at 1.
For me, it's incredibly personal. I was there last night praying. People that I know, friends of mine, were inside. The rabbi is a good friend of mine. And it's a shocking day, but sadly a day that we all knew would come to pass.
Well, I was going to ask you that. In your heart of hearts, you must have felt, before it happened, this is the kind of thing that could happen. This is the toxic atmosphere in which we now live, and there's at least a 50-50 chance something like this will happen at some synagogue somewhere in the United Kingdom.
Absolutely. For 2 years, we have faced a tsunami of Jew hatred ever since October the 7th. We've been subjected to physical attacks, to vandalism, to online abuse, to Jewish patients being mistreated in the NHS by medics who are wearing pro-Palestinian badges. We've had Jewish students intimidated on campus. We've had Jewish people that have to undergo purity tests in the workplace or in creative spaces to confirm whether or not they're Zionists, which basically mean Jews. We've had hate marches up and down our cities every weekend with banners being held aloft comparing Israelis and Jews and Nazis. And this is the culmination of 2 years of unchecked Jew hatred targeting the Jewish UK Jewish community for a war that's going on 2,500 miles away.
Well, let's talk now to Nicole Lampert, who's a journalist who writes about anti-Semitism, and she is covering the story. Nicole, in the last half an hour or so, there has been an image circulating online of the suspect who is now dead, and people are making assumptions from that about his identity. I mean, all I would be able to say is just what I can see from the social media pictures too, which is that he is quite a young man and he is bearded. But we know what assumptions people might be making about his cultural identity, about his ethnicity. Can you add any actual evidence or detail from what you've been hearing so far today?
I'm afraid I couldn't comment on that aspect of it. All I've seen is the same as you. I know quite closely a relative of one of those who's been stabbed. This is someone who recently lost his wife and has a daughter who may now find herself an orphan because of what this man has done. As to his ethnicity, I wouldn't want to comment, and I certainly wouldn't want to see any sort of rioting or anything like that, although I think that's probably unlikely to happen. But it is, I suppose I would say that it could come from, like, threats against Jews have been on the rise for the last 2 years, but they've always been present for as long as I've existed. And they have always come from the far right, Islamic extremists, and the far left. So it could be any one of those.
Absolutely. And thank you for saying all of that, because we shouldn't speculate and we shouldn't make assumptions. And as Alex Dibble, our deputy news editor, was saying, actually the Greater Manchester Police have been exceptionally speedy in telling people as much as they can, and we should just wait to hear more information from them, possibly during the course of the afternoon. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Jewish community in Crumpsall?
Well, the Manchester Jewish community is quite a small but incredibly close-knit community. My husband is a Mancunian Jew. Everybody knows each other. That synagogue is really near King David's School, which is it's where many of them, including my husband, went to and their children go to. So that sums up the community. Everyone knows each other's business. Everyone knows someone. And as I say, it's my father-in-law's girlfriend, is that her cousin is someone who is injured. Other people that I know, they know the rabbi and talk of him as a lovely man. So everyone, especially in the Manchester Jewish community, were affected, but that rolls out to all of the other Jewish communities, London, where I am, Scotland, Leeds. And we all feel it because we've all been at synagogue, or most of us have been at synagogue this morning. And I should just explain that these synagogues, they already have a kind of ring of steel around them. The synagogue I went into this morning, we have security guards outside. Then we have a kind of steel fence. And then you have security guards inside next to the door, which is a bulletproof, bombproof door. Then inside, if you look it to the right, you would see there are CCTV cameras which completely surround the synagogue. And just around the synagogue perimeter, there are volunteers from the community in stab-proof vests, making sure that there's no one that can get into the synagogue. And it appears that one of those who was stabbed may have been one of the volunteers with the CST, which helps protect all of our synagogues. Mm. So one of the questions that was asked earlier was this a surprise? And For me, it's not a surprise that Jews have been killed or targeted, but it is a surprise that they were to target a synagogue because they are well protected. But as I mentioned, there's also the school, which is really nearby. So, of course, that's going to put even more fear amongst people.
Sure. Can you also, for us, Nicole, explain the huge significance of today in the Jewish calendar?
It's part of the Jewish New Year. It's the kind of final part of it. It's one of our most holy days. Today we're in synagogue, we're repenting of our sins, everyone is fasting. Our fast started at about 6:30 last night. That's no food, no water, no anything. Lasts for 25 hours, and it's meant to be a time of kind of purifying our souls, and also thinking about those who have died, and thinking about future, and thinking peaceful thoughts. And that's very much in our minds. But obviously, we're coming up to the 2-year anniversary of the October 7 massacre. We've had 2 years of hatred. There's also a peace deal on the table that we're all hopeful will be signed. So there's a time of reflection.
What's the response that you would like to hear from politicians today and in the coming days?
I'd like to hear them take some responsibility for this. I'd like them, I don't think this will happen. I'd like them to see that allowing 2 years of untrammeled hatred on our streets has an effect. But I don't think that they will say anything about that, because that would mean that they would have to acknowledge their own failings in this. I don't want to just hear anti-Semitism and all forms of racism. Anti-Semitism is a specific form of racism, which I feel has only been encouraged, particularly by recognising a state of Palestine as a result of the murder of 1,200 Jews. So that is what I would like to hear. But also, I feel very cynical about it all.
Sure. I mean, I have to say, Nicole, and I can hear the emotion in your voice there, so I am not wishing to inflict any more difficulty on you on a difficult day, but it would be very unlikely, surely, that Keir Starmer and the other members of the Labour Party who have advocated for a Palestinian state would respond to an attack like today's by changing that direction.
Of course they won't. Of course, and they won't acknowledge any of their failings. The fact that our court system has allowed terrorist supporters free rein, that we've had, going down our streets, down the streets of Manchester, streets of London, Leeds, Glasgow, all these places, people calling for the Intifada to be globalised. Well, this is the globalisation of the Intifada. The Intifada was the murder of Jews in Israel, and now it's been globalised.
Okay, so what would be a helpful thing to hear, I mean, almost on a kind of smaller level within Crumsall today, that would help to actually keep some kind of unity within a community that is going to be in shock?
I think what would be nice would be to have other communities come out and call this out and say, enough of this. And obviously at the start of this, there was a kind of talk of the Muslim community. It would be great to have people from the Muslim community speaking out against it and saying how disgusted they are by it.
Well, we will wait to see if that is forthcoming. Thank you very much indeed for your time this afternoon. That's Nicole Lampert, who is a journalist.
You're listening to Times Radio, and Keir Starmer is now back in the UK. He had been in Copenhagen for a meeting of about European defence, but he's back in the UK, and we're told he is going to be chairing a COBRA meeting, and we're also expecting a police press conference. The counter-terror police are due to make a statement at around about 3:15 this afternoon. I'm sure we'll be able to bring you that here on Times Radio. Next, why refugees could lose rights under new plans from the government. It is now 3:13.
The Evening Edition with Kate Borsay on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Embark on an evening expedition, rounding up the latest news and previewing tomorrow's headlines. Plus, don't miss Hit the Road, your essential weekly travel guide to the best destinations across the UK and beyond. The Evening Edition, tonight from 7 on Times Radio with the new Volkswagen California camper van. Designed for every adventure. Search New Volkswagen California to find out more.
The Story, the award-winning daily news podcast from The Times. Listen in the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Life's like a photo album.
Mine bring back so many memories. That's a street party on VE Day. Me, 3 years old. Oh, here's me, 17, teddy boy. Our wedding. Didn't my Shirley look lovely? Holiday in Devon when the boys were small. They tower over me now. Oh, now these are the more recent ones on my phone. Oh, that's me and Kate enjoying a game of cards. She's my care professional from home instead. Kind, funny and very good at gin rummy. Since Shirley passed away, Kate comes to the house most days to help with the things I can't manage so well now. She's great company. I mean, the boys visit me most weekends, but they can't be here all the time, so home instead have really helped. I have the best quality care, but in my own home, from Kate. She's wonderful. Though she will have to let me win at cards now and again.
For award-winning home care you can trust, go to homeinstead.co.uk.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like... and more like... feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. Exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
You can contact us on the WhatsApp 0333 003 2353. Now, some of the automatic rights given to refugees are going to be scrapped under new plans announced by the Prime Minister. They'll no longer have a guaranteed right to settle in the UK after 5 years. They'll also have to earn the ability to bring family members here. Well, we're going to have a word now with Lord Kirkhope, who's a Tory peer and a former immigration minister. Lord Kirkhope, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Before we start our discussion on that specific point, may I just say, as a former member of Parliament for Leeds, for North East Leeds, which has one of the biggest Jewish communities in the country, how sad and concerned I am about what has been going on in Manchester today. And I was also a race relations minister when I was handling immigration too. So these are matters which really do, you know, come home. And I'm really very sad about it, and I'm very sorry. And I, my thoughts are going out to that community in Manchester, but also to the wider community and the Jewish community around the country as well.
Thank you for that. And I wonder, what would you like to hear later on today, not just from the likes of the Home Secretary, who has actually said how horrified she is, but perhaps from the Prime Minister, and indeed from members of the Muslim community as well.
Well, yes, I'm waiting to hear. I did hear a few minutes ago that I think part of the Muslim community have actually come out very strongly in support, particularly in Manchester, of their Jewish friends and the Jewish community, and said how much they deprecate what has gone on and so on. And I think that is important. And I think as we go on in the next few days, I think the more people that make those views quite clear, the better it will be, because seriously affecting the way in which communities get together and the attitudes and so on which are taking place at the moment are matters of the deepest concern to me as a former immigration minister. I have deprecated for some time now the level of rhetoric that I have heard on various subjects, which seem to me not to have helped in terms of improving community relations. And I just hope, we don't know the facts of this case at all yet or what exactly has happened, but it does seem to me that it is absolutely vital that we make sure that we are very, very careful, politicians in particular, in the way in which we present some of the more sensitive issues that are in front of us, particularly at the moment, that issue of immigration.
Yes, well, I'm afraid it is just simply true, isn't it, Lord Kirkhope, that some people will try to take advantage of what's happened in Manchester today, and not everybody will be watching their words.
No, that's right. And I think that this is something which, the Prime Minister's come back early from the European political community meeting, which he's been in, at Denmark, and he was to chair today a round table on the very subject, on migration, in which we were going to talk, or he was going to talk about changes to the European Convention on Human Rights, which I think is overdue, and I agree entirely about that. But also discussing with European colleagues the issues about those who get asylum in various European countries, i.e. the award of asylum, which I've always regarded as being extremely important and valuable, but something which has to be controlled within the strict parameters of the 1951 European the Convention on Refugees.
OK, well, can we go back then to the facts of what Sir Keir Starmer has announced? No guaranteed right to settle in the UK after 5 years. Also, people will have to earn the ability to bring family members over here. Now, we are told that we are effectively more generous than the rest of Europe. Is that actually the case?
It's the case in some countries. It varies across Europe, because I have to, again, tell you clearly that granting asylum is a first element, if you like, of the question of whether people can or cannot remain in a country. So asylum has to be separated out, and the parameters of asylum have to be put forward and enforced in a proper manner. So people who should get asylum, the numbers, for instance, the percentages, we have reduced the percentage of numbers of being granted asylum in the last year or two. We're now down to about 47% of the applications meet the criteria. So first of all, you have to deal with that. People who do not meet the criteria have got to be returned. And I was able to do that when I was minister, because we were members of the European Union. So in particular, I was able to get the intelligence that I needed to find out if people had claimed asylum elsewhere, what had happened to them elsewhere in Europe. And I was able to return them to the European Union. And that was important. We don't have that ability anymore. But nevertheless, we have been reducing the percentage, quite rightly, in my view. It was getting far too big in terms of acceptance of people who claimed asylum. But the second point is, once they have got asylum, then countries are, of course, free under their immigration rules to put whatever conditions they wish on the future residency or settlement of individuals. And I therefore would not criticise the government for wanting to look at this question of settlement and entitlement in the way that they're doing. In fact, I do think it's a very positive step, one which I think is very difficult to argue with, and one which I think meets perhaps the wishes also of other European countries who are looking at this in exactly the same way right now.
Now, we know that reform makes a great deal of hay, frankly, by their passionate and often decried belief that both Labour and the Tories have simply chosen to ignore lowering immigration, not ignoring it, but ignoring how significant it is to a fair chunk of the voting population. But as you've just pointed out, part of our current difficulty is because of Brexit. Is that pointed out often enough to Nigel Farage?
Well, I pointed out to the irritation and boredom of some of my colleagues, I have to say, because I was very much in favour of us remaining within the European Union for a whole lot of reasons. And as a former immigration minister, one of the main reasons was just that, i.e. I actually also had the honour, if you like, of drafting the Dublin regulations, or helping to do so, which were regulations that allowed us to return people to other European countries where they had previously applied for asylum and then ended up irregularly in our country. We could return them in those days. And the other thing was, when we left the European Union, we also left the ability to have a complete database available from other security forces, which would help us to identify people who had claimed asylum previously. So we had a double whammy when we left the European Union. We lost that information, which we still haven't got back fully, even where our relations with Europe are improving again. And also, we lost the ability to return people. And I believe that those two things alone actually made a big difference. You just have to look at the numbers of people arriving here in boats now, compared with when we were in the European Union. It's a dramatically different set of numbers. And it seems to me, therefore, that the more we can work with our European neighbours now, the better it will be.
Yes, you say that you say yourself, self-deprecatingly, that you bore people about this. When you when you do make that point to would-be reform voters, are they shocked or surprised, or do they still decide, they still stick to the belief that Nigel Farage is a man with the answers?
Well, I've got quite a lot of friends who've been good, solid Conservatives all their lives, but are now looking at reform because it seems to have rather simpler answers to the difficult questions of the day. I do actually point out to them, and I think they tend to agree when I point it out, that what we really want in order to satisfy their requirements and obviously the needs of people in this country to do with immigration is just to have an effective and efficient way of with clear rules that we can tell people about, showing that we actually are concerned to keep our borders protected, but at the same time to benefit from immigration in the right categories and also to remove people from this country who have no right to be here under immigration rules, or indeed on the basis of not being able to claim asylum effectively.
And what do you say to some of the Labour Party's critics who say that you can't beat reform by trying to out-reform them?
No, I agree. I do agree. I mean, the what I'm worried about at the moment is my wonderful party that I've been a member of for so many years runs the risk, as does the Labour Party, of trying to parallel reform. Well, I'm sorry, but out there, there are millions of people who actually, I believe, operate in a kind of centrist position in politics, who actually believe in good government and want good government, but they don't believe in extremism. And they don't believe in all this rhetoric. They believe in just proper, efficient and effective government. And that's what I want to see in relation to immigration and asylum. And frankly, if you can achieve that and show you're doing the job, I hope that when I did it for 2.5 years or so, I hope that I was able to bring together the people who, for instance, Refugee Council on the one side and then people on the other side yep. who were concerned about immigration numbers. I hope to bring them together so at the end of my time, and I hope at the end of the government's time, people will say, yes, we accept that that was a sensible policy that you delivered. And we don't need to be rioting in the streets or calling names to people in communities and being really nasty, which is, I'm afraid, where we seem to be heading right now.
I'm afraid you might be right. I really appreciate your time. That's Lord Kirkhope, Tory peer, former immigration minister.
Across the UK, on DAB digital radio, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
It is now 3 o'clock. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio. We're going to bring you the latest on the attack on the synagogue in Manchester. The Prime Minister has returned to the UK for an emergency meeting, and a press conference from counter-terrorism is set to start, possibly in just a few minutes' time. We will bring you that live. Europe's leaders are gathered in Denmark for a summit on the continent's security. We'll talk to the Times' defence editor, who's there. And our big interview after 3:30 is with the historical novelist Ken Follett on his new book and his writing career. Let's get the very latest news with Stuart Willey.
Fee, thank you. Good afternoon. Police in Manchester say two people have died in a suspected terror attack on a synagogue. In the last hour, they've confirmed the suspect has also died. He was shot by armed officers. The confirmation of his death was delayed by suspicious items on his body. Emergency services were called this morning to reports of a car being driven at worshippers and the stabbing of a security guard. People have gathered outside waiting to hear from family members at the synagogue.
Well, my granddaughter works there. She takes a service there every Shabbos on a Saturday, so I would have thought she would have been there today. She would have been inside, so I would have thought so.
The Prime Minister, Sir Keir Starmer, has returned to the UK to shortly chair a meeting of the Cobra Emergency Committee.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country, and we will do everything to keep our Jewish community safe.
It comes on Yom Kippur, Judaism's most holy day, a solemn day of fasting and prayer when many attend synagogue. Lord Pickles, Eric Pickles, was the UK special envoy on post-Holocaust issues. He told Times Radio, "This is a heartbreaking day."
I've witnessed the past few years
friends who are Jewish, who are genuinely concerned about their own safety, concerned about their children going on the tube, concerned about their elderly parents on public transport. You know, it's a cliche about what happens to the Jews, happens to the rest of us. They're on the very front line.
In other news, a new last-ditch effort to rescue Thames Water has been presented to regulators. A group owed money by the firm is asking for new performance targets to avoid further penalties over pollution incidents and leaks. The Times' business news editor is John Rees.
The creditors of Thames Water, those investors who put money in, have today come up with a proposal to write off a lot of that debt, £7.5 billion worth, and to invest much more money into Thames over the next few years or so, about £20 billion.
The Health Secretary is launching an urgent review into the vetting process for foreign doctors. It's after the Times revealed that doctors who have been banned from practicing abroad are working in the NHS. 20 suspected people smugglers have been arrested as part of a crackdown on small boat crossings. They were detained as part of a two-week intelligence-led operation across the country. Ryanair's chief executive is warning that next week's air traffic control strike in France will cost his company £20 million. Michael O'Leary says it will be the customers who will be worse off, as 100,000 passengers could see their flights disrupted. And a Fabergé egg commissioned by Emperor Nicholas II in 1913 is expected to fetch more than £20 million at auction in London. The winter egg, which is engraved with a frost design and features more than 3,000 diamonds, was a gift for his mother. For a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
Across the UK, on DAB Digital Radio, on the free Times Radio app, and via your smart speaker.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Good afternoon. We're here until 4 o'clock. Just a quick burst of your reaction to the conversation with Lord Kirkhope. quite a bit of division, fair to say. You didn't challenge that Remain a Fool on the facts. Shame on you, says Barry in Truro. On the other hand, this is from Jenny. I miss the old sensible Tories. I'd vote Tory if they sounded like that again. And I've never voted Tory. That's Jenny in Kent. You can keep in touch with the programme. We love hearing from you. 0333 003 2353. Now, the big story of the day, and it's deeply distressing news, that counter-terror police are going to speak shortly about the attack on the synagogue in Manchester this morning. Two people have died. Three people are in a serious condition. Times Radio's deputy head of news is Alex Dibble. Now, what's happened in the last hour or so, Alex?
Well, we've had the confirmation that the offender in this case has died. That was confirmed at about 2:15. The confirmation was brief. The force simply said that three people have died, including the offender who was shot by firearms officers. We already knew that two members of the public had died and that the suspect had been shot. So the new piece of information there was simply that the offender was confirmed to have been killed. They also shed light on the explosion that I mentioned an hour ago. That was a bang that was heard as the bomb disposal unit worked at the scene. Greater Manchester Police confirmed in their latest statement that that happened as specialist resources, they said, gained entry to the suspect's vehicle as a precaution.
Now, it's just worth repeating, because I do think it's important that we recognise, first of all, the speed and efficiency of the authorities when there are these emergency situations. We don't get many of them, but when we do, the authorities need to react very quickly. And the timeline this morning was what exactly?
Timeline was that at 9:31 a.m, the police received a 999 call from a member of the public who said that he had seen a car being driven at people and that a man had been attacking people with a knife. The police immediately dispatched armed officers to the synagogue. This is in northern Manchester. The armed officers took minutes to get there. Whilst they were on their way, the police declared Plato, which is a code word meaning a marauding terror attack is unfolding. And at 9:38, so just 7 minutes after the first 999 call, those firearms officers shot, and we now know killed, the offender in this case. So it was rapid, to say the least.
And that member of the public who made that very, very quick call. And, you know, sometimes we do see things and we don't always react quickly. Mm. That individual, we don't know who they are, did do the right thing and got the right people to that scene super, super quickly.
Absolutely remarkable, yes. And even now, members of the public are are calling police with more information. Of course, what's interesting is that in an incident like this, okay, yes, the offender, the suspect, has been neutralised, is the word that is often used by the officials in these cases, but they now need to conduct a very fast and widespread investigation to see whether there was anybody linked to this, whether anybody helped him carry out an attack like this. And on that note, a witness has said that they have seen two men in handcuffs being led away by police. This witness lives on White House Avenue, which is not far from Heaton Park Synagogue. They said police had closed their road. There was a helicopter above them, six or seven police cars with armed officers. I should stress it is not clear if this was linked to the attack, and Greater Manchester Police indeed has not confirmed any arrests linked to this incident. But police and counter-terror specialists will tell you, and have been today making this point, that when something like this happens, police have to immediately, as fast as they can, check the suspect's social media platforms, check their address, whether they own any vehicles, have they rented the vehicle, all of these sorts of things. And that can often help them gather evidence, which then leads them to a particular address or some other location elsewhere in the city or the surrounding area. A very similar thing happened when the Manchester Arena bombing happened, which I reported on in Manchester. It was hours, within hours, that the police were raiding an address, what looked like a perfectly normal house in a quiet area elsewhere in the city, and actually that address was key to the investigation.
Now, speculation is rife, inevitably. I don't want to be too snooty about it because it's bound to happen, but what do we know for sure about the alleged attacker here?
Very, very little. There's an image that has emerged of him, what he looks like. He has facial hair. He looks like to be bald at the top with a beard at the bottom. In terms of his build, you can see, but in terms of his background, his ethnicity, people would draw conclusions from the image that has been released. And that image also, I should say, included bags around his belt that people thought was a bomb that he was carrying. And we know that there was an explosive device involved in this incident. Indeed, the initial clip footage that emerged was an officer telling the members of the public to get away because, in his words, the suspect had a bomb. But other than that, we know remarkably little about the offender.
Alex, stay with us. We do know that we're waiting for two separate police press conferences, the Counter-Terror Police and also Greater Manchester Police, both of whom are hosting press conferences in the relatively near future. Tally Fraser is assistant editor of Conservative Home and a member of Manchester's Jewish community. Tally, tell us a little bit about the community in Manchester.
Well, the community in Manchester, it's a fairly sizable one of the biggest in the UK, and a very close-knit one. I think all Jewish communities are, really. I was just having a look at Heaton Park's website, and there's part of their statement where they say the Jewish people are one family and we feel each other's suffering, and that's definitely true today, unfortunately.
Yes, it is the holiest day in Judaism, Yom Kippur. What does that represent?
Yeah, it's the holiest day in the Jewish calendar. So, I mean, a lot of Jewish people will be going without on their phones, not like I am. But a lot of people will be finding out about this horrendous incident by just leaving their synagogue and finding increased security. It's the Day of Atonement. It's a really meaningful day, and for it to be tarnished like this is horrifying.
It's a very, very depressing day, and condolences, obviously, to you and to other people who are really feeling it all today. But I've been really shocked by the sense of inevitability about this, that it was only a matter of time. Did you feel that?
Yeah, I think you'll have trouble finding anyone in the Jewish community who doesn't feel that way. You know, week in, week out, there are volunteer security officers outside synagogues protecting us from threats like this, because it's a necessary step, unfortunately. My dad has been on security outside our synagogue in Manchester today. And it's something that we've needed for years before, you know, this flare up that we've seen in the Middle East and the rise that has then had a knock on effect in anti-Semitic incidents in the UK. So, it's a really unfortunate thing, and that it's horrifying, but it's not a surprise.
What do you, I know you can't speak for the entire Jewish community, but what do you as an individual want to hear from the Prime Minister?
It's a difficult question that, Jane. I think an understanding of where this sentiment has come from, and some sort of deeper understanding and sign from him about what exactly can be done to stop this root of anti-Semitism that seems to have we've got ourselves in this country.
Will it change what's happened today? Will it change the way you live your life?
I think that would be the worst thing to happen from this. I know that there'll be a temptation of many for it to. I mean, it crossed my mind about whether I still go to synagogue for Ne'ilah, which is the end of Yom Kippur this evening. But having thought about it, it would be the worst thing to happen. You know, we have to keep being proud British Jews, keep practicing, and not let this attack do exactly what it was meant to do, which was to try and make us fear and try and stop.
Tani, can I ask you a quick question? Because I'm not sure people outside of the Jewish community really understand this, but the security guards who are at synagogues and at Jewish schools and Jewish centres, they are most likely to be people from within the Jewish community. These aren't security guards who've come from a company to be, you know, just kind of employed for the day or the week or whatever.
So on high holy days like today, you will also get hired security guards, but they'll be alongside volunteers. So there's a group called the CST. You'll probably have heard about it a lot today, the Community Security Trust. And they provide training for volunteer members of each community, to stand on the door of the building, to stand on the gates in front of the building, to stand on the corner of roads, to watch for suspicious cars, suspicious people. I think some of the most moving photos and images from Heaton Park today were just seeing those volunteer security guards in their high-vis jackets and caps, who are just there to, you know, look out for their communities. People are putting themselves at risk, but it's all to protect their own communities. It's very special.
Thank you very much for your time. That's Tali Fraser, Assistant Editor of Conservative Home, but more importantly today, a member of the Jewish community in Manchester. So as Jane said, we are expecting two press conferences imminently. The first will be from the counter-terrorism branch at Scotland Yard, and then Greater Manchester Police are also going to give a press conference too. You'll be hearing both of those on Times Radio. Were they to happen at the same time, and I wouldn't have thought that they would, we will play them back to back, and we will certainly go live to the counter-terrorism one as soon as it starts. We were expecting that to be just before 3:15, but it looks like there's a tiny delay there. You're listening to Jane and Fee on Times Radio, and it is now exactly 3:15.
Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October. 2 days of big deals on electronics, home, kitchen and more. That'll make you feel less like and more like feel like a big deal. Amazon Prime Big Deal Days are the 7th and 8th of October, exclusively for Prime members. Join Prime now.
Here's the truth about AI. AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/UK/AI for people.
I believe those who are curious see the world differently. At Viking, we have always been curious and quite a bit different. For over 25 years, we have been connecting the thinking person with the world. First on the great rivers, then on all five oceans, now on all seven continents.
We are One Viking, exploring the world in comfort.
Visit Times Radio on YouTube for the latest videos and interviews. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
We are after 3:30 this afternoon going to talk to Ken Follett. He was one of the most successful novelists of all time.
Of all time.
Also, much more importantly, one of Jane Garvey's favourite novelists. You should know that Jane often advocates a short book, but in Ken's case, she makes a massive exception. And what's Ken's latest tome coming in at?
Let's go to the end. 592 pages.
Okay, with quite small font as well.
Yeah. A lot of content.
This one is about Stonehenge.
Yes,
spoiler alert, it does get built. And we will
this morning
now join the counter-terrorism press conference taking place.
In Manchester. Two people have died. The attacker has been shot dead by the police. We believe we know their identity, but for safety reasons at the scene, we're unable to confirm at this stage. Three other members of the public are in a serious condition. We have also made two further arrests. And based on what we know, counter-terrorism policing has declared this as a terrorist incident. Our specialist teams are now leading the investigation into what happened at Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue and working closely with Greater Manchester Police. As we do this, those who have been killed and injured are at the forefront of our minds, as are their families, friends, and all of those who love them. An attack on our Jewish community today on Yom Kippur is devastating. Communities across the UK would normally be marking this holy day are now grieving and worried about their safety. And I want to be clear, UK policing is mobilising, and it's mobilising fast. Police forces are stepping up patrols across the country, at synagogues and Jewish sites, and more widely to provide reassurance to all those communities who have been affected by this incident. At Counterterrorism Police, we're deploying all of our capabilities in response to what has happened. And we have resources from across our network involved. We will ensure every piece of intelligence and line of inquiry is interrogated. We're working closely with the security services to ensure we have a full intelligence picture in the coming days and weeks. Following events in Crumpsall today, I'd also like to ask the public to remain vigilant. Please report anything that doesn't feel right to the police and be alert to what is happening in your own communities. Thank you.
Well, that was the voice of Assistant Commissioner Lawrence Taylor, the National Head of Counter-Terror Policing, and he was speaking from Scotland Yard in London. And we are expecting another press conference relatively shortly from Greater Manchester Police. But he went through the details of this morning's incident, including notably reference to two more arrests. We weren't sure when we heard from Alex Dibble a little earlier whether the arrests in the area were connected to what's gone on today, but it would seem from what the Assistant Commissioner has said that there is a connection between those arrests and the events at the synagogue. There also seem to be quite a few new clips emerging courtesy of people's individual filming of events at the time, and that certainly has seemed to suggest that there might have been other people around the one suspect who was shot at the time. And there is also news as well, and certainly some footage of the car that was involved in the attack and the police being able to get close to that. As you will know, if you've been following these developments throughout the day, there was a time at which it couldn't be said that the suspect had been shot because he was photographed and he was seen to have divided
devices strapped around his waist. And so the bomb disposal experts had to wait to be allowed in there to do their work and do a controlled explosion, at which point they could confirm that the suspect had been shot dead. So we are expecting the second press conference. That will come from Greater Manchester Police, and that should be happening sometime in the next 10 minutes or so. And obviously we will go live to that one as well.
Right, let's just recap some of the details. You might well be aware that an image of the man thought to be the attacker has been shared online. Nothing else is known about the individual. We need to make that very clear. But you can, you know, it's a relatively blurred image, but you can see basically a bearded man, looks to be in his early 30s. Now, the MP for the area is Graham Stringer. He gave his reaction to the attack. Here he is talking on Times Radio earlier.
I know the synagogue really well. I used to live around the corner from it. I've been to services there. I've done hustings there. Just know many of the congregation by first names. It's appalling. And basically, that synagogue and the other synagogues in the area go out of their way to improve relationships with the Muslim community. And that's reciprocated. It is just that there are a small number of extreme people who want to destroy those good relationships, and as well as killing people and damaging the purpose of this attack is to damage those relationships. And in Manchester, because sadly we have had the bomb in 2017 and other attacks, we will not allow those relationships to be destroyed.
Well, Rafi Bloom is a member of the synagogue, and he spoke to Andrew Neil on The Times at One.
For me, it's incredibly personal. I was there last night praying. People that I know, friends of mine, were inside. The rabbi is a good friend of mine. And it's a shocking day, but sadly a day that we all knew would come to pass.
Well, I was going to ask you that. In your heart of hearts, you must have felt, before it happened, this is the kind of thing that could happen. This is the toxic atmosphere in which we now live, and there's at least a 50-50 chance something like this will happen at some synagogue somewhere in the United Kingdom.
Absolutely. For 2 years, we have faced a tsunami of Jew hatred ever since October the 7th. We've been subjected to physical attacks, to vandalism, to online abuse, to Jewish patients being mistreated in the NHS by medics who are wearing pro-Palestinian badges. We've had Jewish students intimidated on campus. We've had Jewish people that have to undergo purity tests in the workplace or in creative spaces to confirm whether or not they're Zionists, which basically mean Jews. We've had hate marches up and down our cities every weekend with banners being held aloft comparing Israelis and Jews and Nazis. And this is the culmination of 2 years of unchecked Jew hatred targeting the Jewish UK Jewish community for a war that's going on 2,500 miles away.
That's Rafi Bloom, who is a member of the synagogue in Crumpsall in Manchester, talking there to Andrew Neil. Well, the attack has been confirmed as a terror attack by Scotland Yard, and two further arrests have been made as well. We learnt that detail in the last half hour or so. In the last 10 minutes, we heard from Scotland Yard's Assistant Commissioner Lawrence Taylor, a national head of counter-terror policing.
This morning, an appalling attack took place in Crumpsall in Manchester. Two people have died. The attacker has been shot dead by the police. We believe we know their identity, but for safety reasons at the scene, we're unable to confirm at this stage. Three other members of the public are in a serious condition. We have also made two further arrests. And based on what we know, counter-terrorism policing has declared this as a terrorist incident. Our specialist teams are now leading the investigation into what happened at Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue and working closely with Greater Manchester Police. As we do this, those who have been killed and injured are at the forefront of our minds, as are their families, friends, and all of those who love them. An attack on our Jewish community today on Yom Kippur is devastating. Communities across the UK would normally be marking this holy day are now grieving and worried about their safety.
Well, that is Lawrence Taylor, who is Scotland Yard's Assistant Commissioner and the National Head of Counter-Terror Policing.
So we are going to dip into a press conference as and when it happens. As you can tell, we're not entirely sure of when that's going to start, but you will hear it here on Times Radio. And bear with us as we just try and bring you the very latest as it happens on this story. After 3:30, we are going to change tack a bit and we're going to talk to the stunningly successful novelist Ken Follett about his latest book, Circle of Days.
Yeah, now earlier in the week, Fee talked to the brilliant foreign correspondent Lise Doucette. This was just as it was announced that the Taliban had shut down the internet in Afghanistan. That's such an interesting conversation, and you can hear it as part of our off-air podcast. Off-air with Jane and Fee is the Times Radio podcast that we do, and it comes your way Monday to Thursday at around about 6 o'clock. But just to give you a taste of that conversation, Lise shared that not all of the Taliban want really extreme measures brought in.
The last time I went to Kabul, a founding member of the Taliban said to me, 95% of the Taliban, 95% do not agree with these edicts. We understand that Islam allows, in fact, urges the education of women, the opportunities for women, but the unity of the Taliban matters more than anything else. And so far, they've not been willing to significantly challenge the ultra-conservative clique, which is handing down edicts like this one today.
Lise Doucette, it's so fascinating, Afghanistan, whilst being simultaneously infuriating and horrifying. But Lise's book, it is brilliant, isn't it? I know it's a bestseller already.
The Finest Hotel in Kabul is a really beautiful book, because what Lise has decided to do, and I think it really works actually, it might not have worked, but it works because her writing is so classy. She has fictionalised the encounters, the early years encounters with some of the people that she has met in the present day. So she has met Hazrat, who is one of the employees at the Intercontinental Hotel in Kabul, you know, several times over the last 10 years or so, but she takes us back to him as a young man. So imagines his life when he first started working there at the age of 17 in 1979. So she can conjure up life in Afghanistan through the 70s and the 80s, the proxy wars that were fought within that country brought untold misery to so many Afghans. But throughout all of this, this five-star glamorous hotel just kind of carried on ticking. Yeah. So it's a book that's almost reads like romantic fiction at times. But obviously what Lise then brings to it are her own personal recollections of staying at the Hotel Intercontinental and the kind of work that she was doing. And she takes us all the way up to the present day. So it's just a beautiful way to read about modern history. I've never read a book like it, actually. And Jane, it's got pictures. It's got photographs too. And who doesn't love a photograph within a great big book?
Thank you. Yes, it is. Honestly, it's a great book. She was a great guest. And you can hear her and indeed so many other brilliant people who've all agreed to be guests on Off Air with Jane and Fee. So chase up that podcast. Become a member of the Off Air family if you haven't already done so. It is Times Radio. It's 3:30. Here are the latest news headlines. Stuart Willey.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio.
Jane, thank you. Good afternoon. Police say they've declared this morning's attack on a synagogue in Manchester a terrorism incident. Assistant Commissioner Lawrence Taylor is National Head of Counter-Terror Policing at Scotland Yard.
The attacker has been shot dead by the police. We believe we know their identity, but for safety reasons at the scene, we're unable to confirm at this stage. Three other members of the public are in a serious condition. We have also made two further arrests.
Two people were killed. Witnesses say a man rammed a car into people in the Crumpsall area before stabbing members of the public. Extra police are being deployed to synagogues across the country in response. Today is Yom Kippur, a day for Jewish people to pray, fast and seek forgiveness. Local resident Esther Aronson attends the synagogue.
I heard bang, bang, and then we heard the helicopters, we heard the siren, but then we heard this gunshot and there'd been a terrorist attack in the synagogue. I want to say how amazing the rabbi is. He's incredible. He prayed us all last night that everyone should be safe.
In other news, England's former children's commissioner has told the COVID inquiry the government should make a formal apology to young people. Anne Longfield says avoidable mistakes damage their well-being and education. Some weather warnings for tomorrow have been upgraded to amber. Forecasters say Storm Amy could bring damaging winds to large parts of Scotland. And for a roundup of the news on demand, find the Times News Briefing on the Times Radio app.
This is Times Radio.
Those who are curious feel an urge to travel, to explore the world. At Viking, we create voyages for the thinking person because travel enriches the mind and connects cultures in meaningful ways. With small, modern, all-veranda ocean ships that were designed to bring you closer to the destination, discover the world's iconic cities and quaint villages. Exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Ah, doesn't it feel good to get stuff done? That life admin you finally ticked off? Like getting your will sorted. It's so important, but where to start? I mean, who do you talk to? Well, if you're not sure, Marie Curie can help. They're the charity who specialise in end-of-life care, and that starts with your will talk. Their free guide is packed with information that makes it so much easier. Get your reassurance today. Simply search online for Marie Curie Will Talk.
Ever wondered what power is? Power is transforming the sun into your own energy source. Power is getting energy companies to pay you. Power is enjoying your morning coffee, knowing you created the energy to make it. Well, you and the colossal ball of fire in the sky. Because with solar panels from Hive, the sun works for you. Hive, know your power. May not cover all electricity usage, roof and weather dependent. Paid for surplus requires eligible SET tariff.
Daryl Morris wraps up the weekend's news and takes a look at the week ahead, Saturday and Sunday from 10 p.m. Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Times Radio, good afternoon. We are waiting for that press conference in Manchester from Greater Manchester Police, the counter-terror police press conference a little earlier. We did carry that, and it has now been declared as a terrorist incident. Two people have died in a really unpleasant attack on a synagogue in Manchester today. The incident happened at about 9:30 this morning. We're told now that the press conference is going to be at 4 o'clock. So you will hear that in the company of John Pienaar here on Times Radio. Right, that means that brilliantly we are able to indulge ourselves in the company of Ken Follett. In my view, Ken, the greatest writer of thumping great novels any diligent reader can just lose themselves in. How are you?
I'm very well, and thank you for that introduction.
But I mean it. Fee knows I mean every word.
Oh, Ken.
She does. No, she does.
So Jane goes on about you more than any other man in her life, and I really mean that.
Ken isn't in my life. The man is utterly blameless. No. It's just his books are in my life.
I should have put a comma in there, but I felt that the listener didn't need it. So we've declared this to be International Ken Follett Day. Welcome to it.
Come on.
His new book is called Circle of Days. Now, Ken, it's about Stonehenge, and Stonehenge has actually always intrigued me, but I'm afraid to say I've never actually been. Have you been?
Oh, yes, many times now, right, since getting involved in the book. I think I first went when I was a child, about 9 years old, and I think it fascinated me for about 5 minutes. I had an even shorter attention span then than I have now, but I've been back many times since, and it's the questions about it that are so intriguing. Who built it? How did they build it? And why did they build it?
Yeah, well, those are all the questions. Fee has been there. And what did you make of it?
Well, I'm interested that you went when you were quite young, because my mum used to take us. We lived down in that kind of neck of the woods, and she was fascinated by Stonehenge, Avebury Ring, Cerne Abbas, all of those kind of places. And I'm so grateful to you for saying that it only kept your attention for 5 minutes, because it allows me to confess mine was probably three. And I just remember, I mean, back then you could just walk up to it, couldn't you?
Yes.
There was no kind of ding-dong or velvet rope surrounding it, or entrance fee or whatever. Yeah. So I knew that it was important, but I couldn't quite feel why.
Right. Yeah,
so it wasn't until, I think, when I was much older that I realised that I can't answer those questions, and that's what makes it so utterly magical.
Yes, and you can. You used to be able to sit on the stones and write your initials on the stones.
Absolutely. It was very informal, Jane.
Some people used to chip bits off the stone and take them away as souvenirs. So it's a good thing that it was surrounded with a fence.
Right. You've written, obviously, historical novels in the past. People will have read Pillars of the Earth about the construction of a fictional cathedral. And then you wrote the book about the beginning of World War III, which I read when I had COVID. That really did the job for me, Ken. It kept me distracted.
Oh, good.
But do you enjoy the contemporary stuff more than the historical work you've done?
I enjoy it all, really. I just like, you know, the whole idea of having a story to tell and figuring out day by day what's the best way to write this scene, what's the best way to tell this bit of the story. I like it all. History now fascinates me. It never did at school. I was bored with history at school, but I'm fascinated by it now, and I get lots of ideas from history. But I quite like writing contemporary things as well, and Never was the last contemporary one that I wrote about an international crisis that may or may not lead to the end of the world.
Keep you guessing. So you have had advice, I know, from Historic England with this book, haven't you? Were they keen for someone to write this book about Stonehenge?
Stonehenge is run by English Heritage.
Right.
And it is their biggest asset. Thousands and thousands of people go there every day. Even in the winter, thousands of people go. And it's quite well organised now. Little plug from my wife, Barbara, who was Minister of Culture when the present layout was decided.
It's all down to Barbara.
She was one of the people involved anyway.
Yeah.
And it's a really nice layout because there's a huge car park, there's a visitor centre with a cafe and loos and everything, and then you get on a bus and go a mile or so to the monument. So actually, from the monument, you can't see the visitor centre. So the landscape is pristine. It's as it was in the Stone Age, which I think everybody likes.
Okay, can we try to determine when Stonehenge was finished? It took some time, didn't it? Hundreds of years?
Nobody really knows.
No.
It was started about 2500 BC, and in my story, it takes 25 years. But, of course, I'm guessing, in fact, when it comes to the Stone Age, people are guessing almost all the time because very little is actually known about it.
Well, what I did learn from this book, and I was astonished, is that the community at the time, and you say this, and forgive me if I've got this confused, they were allergic to cow's milk. Humans hadn't yet evolved to be able to deal with cow's milk. Is that right?
Well, that's what I was told by the historians.
Okay, that's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And so we changed and we were able to adapt to consuming it in huge quantities.
Well, some people changed. Some people are still allergic to it.
That's true, of course.
And the change took place apparently gradually in different parts of the world. But this part of the world where we are now, people raised cattle from quite an early stage. So it was probably fairly early that they lost their allergy.
Okay. And you talk a lot in this book about the needle, and it was genuine needle, between the differing communities. Some people were farmers and some people were herders. They had very, very different ways of life, didn't they?
Yes. Well, we don't know much about their ways of life, but I figured that how they lived, what kind of community they had, would depend on how they were making their living, as it were, how they were getting food and so on. And it seemed to me that herders would have to own the cattle communally, because there would be about 2,000 cattle on Salisbury Plain, and they would be owned by a group of perhaps 400 or 500 people in the village, and there was no way you could keep track of what cow belonged to which person, because there were too many, and they couldn't brand them because they didn't have iron. It's not the Iron Age yet. And they couldn't paint on the sheep's fleece because they didn't have paint. And so it seemed to me that they would have owned these things communally. And if that was the case, then maybe women would not be property. Most cultures throughout human history, since the beginning of civilization, women have been property. And in many cultures still are. And after all, in our wedding service, the bride is often given by a man to another man.
Yes.
So this, the trace of this is still exists even in our fantastically enlightened society. So I decided that farmers who have private property, this is my farm, these are my cows, these are my goats, probably women would be property in that society. But in a society where property was not, private property was not a big thing, perhaps there would be an attitude between the sexes that was a bit more like ours today.
Okay, well, I was really struck by the relatively free and easy sexual practices that you outline in the book. Fee's looking, she's woken up. Did you see that? she suddenly sat up straight. She went out last night, Ken.
I'm absolutely alert now. Carry on.
No, well, what I learned from the book, and I appreciate a lot of what you're doing, I know you've had advice from English Heritage and all the experts, but you, as you say yourself, you have got to sort of guess at what they were up to.
Absolutely.
Because there's no written record of any of this,
that's
is there?
Right. There was no writing. They had not invented writing.
Exactly. So people had, though, cottoned on to the idea that inbreeding was really, really bad for you. And so just describe what they did to make sure that, frankly, they were able to survive.
Well, they're cattle herders and sheep and shepherds, so they know about inbreeding, and it would be natural for them to understand about inbreeding in their own little community, with perhaps only 500 people in the village, maybe less than that. And so I thought about this, and I thought, well, they must be aware of this, and they must want to take precautions against it. On the other hand, they probably have the idea that the best way to raise children is for them to be raised by the two people who created them.
Yeah.
So then,
but that's nothing to do with religion, is it?
In my book, it isn't. At all. No, it's just it's a rational decision by them. And then to have feasts or parties, or if you want to call them orgies, at certain times during the year, when the normal situation is different, and it's a free-for-all, as it were, and you can go to bed with anybody you like. And that seemed to me a good answer to people who wanted to create stable families and yet at the same time wanted to avoid inbreeding. And
But how would they stop themselves from getting pregnant on those orgy nights?
Well, that's the whole point. The whole point was if you live in a very small community...
I was not expecting Thursday afternoon at 3:45, the seminar, Understanding an Orgy, crack on,
explained by Ken Follett.
Well, the point is, just as they would bring bulls and rams from far away to mate with their herd to introduce what they would call new blood and we would call new DNA, they realise it's actually quite sensible for the human beings as well.
Oh, I see what you mean. So it's an orgy that's bringing lots of people together.
It's an orgy with a point.
An orgy with a point. Well, let's trademark that.
Right. I don't quite know where to go next. Let's talk about the climate, because you reference in the book a drought. And of course, we are often talking about our climate now. Are you making the point that we've always had severe weather of one sort or another, or is it? Am I reading too much into that?
You are reading a bit too much, because I don't really make points. I'm really very basic about telling a good story. And I don't put messages in my book, even though, I mean, everybody knows that I have quite strong political ideas, but it would be fatal for me to put that kind of message in the book, because people would realise I was no longer concentrating on telling them a good story.
Yeah.
I was instead concentrating on... And the thing is, readers also are intelligent, well-read people. I mean, they watch the news and they read the newspapers and so on. They don't need me to tell them what to think. I'm not cleverer than my readers. I might be more imaginative, but I'm not cleverer. So I really don't think it's my role to make points like that. Now, of course, there is a drought, but then there are droughts, you know, in the Bible, there have always been occasional droughts. Yeah. And these people would have been particularly vulnerable to those periods of bad weather. I mean, people who live hand to mouth die soon in famines.
Mm. And indeed, that is proved in the book. So can I ask you where you got your names from? I was going to say the Christian names. Of course, they're not Christian names. They're names. And there's a central character called Seft, another one called Cog. There's Annie. And then there's a priestess, whose name is it Joya?
Joya, yes.
Joya, yeah. So where did you conjure these names up?
Well, of course, we don't know what people's names were in the Stone Age because nothing was written down. We have no idea. So I just thought all I can do is make up a word that sounds as if it might be a name but actually isn't. And hence Seft. I mean, it sounds like something could be a man's name. Somebody said I should have used names like the names of indigenous Americans, like Sitting Bull or Dances with Wolves, yes. Names that tell you something about the person or the person's past, the person's history, and so on. And that would have been a nice idea, but the suggestion came too late for me to put it in the book.
Over 590 pages, it might be a little bit much to have somebody called, I don't know, sitting cosy by the fire waiting for the kettle to boil. To have to keep writing that over nearly 600 pages would be too much, wouldn't it? Yes, have you got a thought?
I have got a thought, Jane. Does your incredible success ever dull your creativity?
Well, I'm hard to know how to respond modestly to that question.
Go for the immodest one. You can just say no.
No, it does. No, it doesn't at all.
But was it some of your kind of? It must have been some of your push in the early days, and a lot of writers do slightly yearn for the time that they felt their creativity was the gateway to the rest of their life. So you've never felt that?
I don't think so. I was told in the early days, I had an agent who said to me, your only problem as a writer is that you're not a tortured soul. And I tell that story because the kind of thing that you write, when you start out, you think I could write anything. You know, I read a Booker Prize winner just in case I wanted to write that sort of novel. I now know that I would, A, wouldn't want to, and B, would not be capable of writing the sort of novel that wins the Booker Prize. But I didn't know it then. But you learn that to some extent, the kind of fiction you write is predetermined by the things that matter to you, the things that, if you want to write a scary scene, you think about the things that scare you. If you want to write a romantic scene, you write about the things that have made you fall in love, or you think about what made me fall in love. And so although I never really write about my own life, you can't help but tell stories that have in them the dramas and so on that are in your own life.
Can we ask you about your politics? You mentioned you're known for your affiliation with the Labour Party, and you've been very generous to the Labour Party over the years. Did you watch Sir Keir Starmer's speech at the conference? What did you make of it?
I didn't watch it, no. But I think, and of course Barbara and I talk about this, she watched the whole thing.
Right.
We talk about this sort
she
of
She was an MP, by the way, in case anybody's wondering.
Yes, yeah. She was a Labour Party MP for Stevenage, which is where we live. And what we have noticed over the last week or two is suddenly positive stories about Keir are appearing in the newspapers, and we're not privy to what's happening in number 10 Downing Street, but our guess is that somebody there has taken hold of their PR. I think Keir is great in many ways. One of the ways he's not great is PR, and I think there's signs now that he's figured out, or somebody has explained to him, that it's one thing to have the right policies, and it's a completely different thing to present them in such a way that the people can see that they're right. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people would say, this is not just my idea, a lot of people would say that that's been lacking a bit in the first year of government, and that it seems to be coming back now.
Really? Okay. Do you think he will lead Labour into the next election?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Apart from anything, I mean, first of all, I think he will be, as things go on, he will be more successful and more popular. And B...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Ken, but we are going to go live now to the press conference, which is being held by Greater Manchester Police.
Holiest day, Yom Kippur. This attack has been officially declared as a terrorist incident, and the investigation is now being led by counter-terrorist police. As has been confirmed by CT policing, we believe that the identity of the offender has been established. But until we are certain of this fact, it is premature to set out this detail at this juncture. In addition, I can confirm that two other individuals have been arrested in connection with this incident, and urgent inquiries are ongoing. We can confirm that two members of our Jewish community have sadly died as a result of this attack. Following a rapid response, armed officers from Greater Manchester Police intercepted the offender, and he was fatally shot by officers within 7 minutes of the original call. Four further people remain in hospital, having suffered a variety of serious injuries, and their treatment is ongoing, and our thoughts are with them and their families. Inquiries are moving at pace, and very visible and proactive policing activity is ongoing across Greater Manchester and beyond. Updates will be provided as soon as is practicable. Our priority is to keep the public safe. At this time, we know that a car was driven directly at members of the public outside the Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue on Middleton Road, Crumsall, in Manchester. The driver of the car was seen then to attack people with a knife. He was wearing about his body a vest which had the appearance of an explosive device. There were a large number of worshippers attending the synagogue at the time of this attack, but thanks to the immediate bravery of security staff and the worshippers inside, as well as the fast response of the police, the attacker was prevented from gaining access. All those inside were safely contained until police were able to confirm that it was safe to leave the premises. Yom Kippur is a day where we see our Jewish community attending their places of worship, places where they and their families should feel entirely safe from harm. I want to share my gratitude to all of those members of the public who called the police as soon as they saw what was happening. This allowed the quick response from our officers, who were able to act swiftly and bravely to bring this horrendous attack to an end. I also want to thank our partners from the other emergency services, local authorities, and the health service, who have provided their ongoing support to us throughout the day and will continue so to do over the coming days. I know that today's horrific events will have a significant impact on all of our communities, not only in Greater Manchester, but across our country. There will be lots of questions that people would like answers to, and quickly. But please understand that some of this will take time. What I can say is that the highly visible response to these dreadful incidents will be sustained as we work to understand the full circumstances of what has happened. I know that you will all join me in keeping those directly affected by what has happened in our thoughts and prayers. There are grieving families and communities at the heart of this in Greater Manchester and beyond. I would therefore ask that people refrain from sharing disturbing and insensitive content online. If you have information, then share it with the police. We stand with all of those affected and will continue to do everything in our power to keep our communities safe. Thank you.
That was the press conference there from Greater Manchester Police. That was the Chief Constable. You're listening to Times Radio. It is 4 minutes to four.
Saturday morning on Times Radio with M&G Advice. Listen every Saturday morning from 10 for a fresh perspective on the week's news and politics. Plus, agenda-setting interviews with politicians and decision-makers, changing the conversation and reframing the discussion in no uncertain terms. Saturday mornings from 10 on Times Radio with M&G Advice. Approaching retirement? Get the advice you need in no uncertain terms from M&G Advice. Authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Listen to Times Radio on your DAB digital radio.
You never forget the dogs you've loved. They have the power to steal our hearts, to love us unconditionally, and be there for us when we need them most, without saying a word. You understand how a dog can change a life. A guide dog can transform the life of someone living with sight loss. Will you help change someone else's life with a gift in your will to guide dogs? Request our free will guide today. Search Guide Dogs Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
I want to see more of the world, so I need my investments to do the same. FNC Investment Trust searches out the world's leading companies and puts my money to work. From the UK to the US and Asia. All through one simple investment. So when it's time to say goodbye work, I'll be saying hello world.
Find FNC on all major investment platforms. It's smart to start with FNC. Capital at risk. This FNC Investment Trust advert is approved for distribution by Columbia Threadneedle Management Limited, February 2025.
We travel to explore, to learn, to connect. At Viking, we believe travel should be more than just a trip. It should be a doorway to cultural insight and personal enrichment. Our itineraries are designed to help you explore and engage with your destination through its food, culture, and customs. Start planning your river, ocean, or expedition journey today. Viking, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at viking.com.
Jane Garvey and Fee Glover on Times Radio.
Well, I'm very, very sorry that we had to truncate our conversation with the brilliant Ken Follett, but you will all understand why, because we did need to hear that press conference. But if you missed the title of the book, it is Circle of Days by Ken Follett. And honestly, Fee, it's such... He just tells a cracking yarn. And this is all about Stonehenge, and you get very invested in the physical effort they must have put into constructing this place of mystery.
I like the way that Ken Follett completely owns where he is in the literary canon, why he writes, what he likes writing about, what he doesn't expect to be part of, the Booker Prize winning, whatever, whatever. And that's some of the reason why he's so successful, isn't it? Because he just really knows his audience.
Yeah.
And actually, on that note, thank you for bearing with us this afternoon. We know that you are a radio literate bunch, so you completely understand when we need to do a little bit of filling for time, when we have live unfolding events that we have to get through. And I know it can feel like a bit of a bumpy ride, but we appreciate you staying with us very much. Our producer today was Felix Forbes. Our technical operator was Ryan Boyden. And all of the news will be covered. We leave you in the expert hands of John Pienaar with Drive.
Across the UK, on DAB, online and on your smart speaker. This is Times Radio, the voice of the times.
Thank you, Fee. Thank you, Jane. At 4 o'clock, I'm John Pienaar with Times Radio Drive. Here are the headlines. The attack outside a synagogue in Manchester that left two people dead has been declared a terrorist incident. And the former Children's Commissioner for England has said the government should apologise to young people for making avoidable mistakes during the pandemic. And coming up on the programme, we're going to be staying with that shocking news from Manchester, with reporters on the ground, with reflections on what it means for the Jewish community in the UK and society more broadly. We're going to be talking to a rabbi and to politicians campaigning against anti-Semitism and to a Jewish leader from Manchester. All of that and more through today's programme. And as European leaders convene in Denmark with recent Russian drone incursions on their minds, I'll be talking to the UK chief executive of Palantir, Louis Mosley, how the West might use tech to defend itself in the future.
This is Times Radio.
Stuart Willey.
John, thank you. Good afternoon. Two people are dead and three have serious injuries after what police say was a terror attack at a synagogue in Manchester. It happened on the holiest day of the Jewish calendar. Witnesses say a man rammed a car into people in the Crumpsall area before stabbing members of the public. Assistant Commissioner Lawrence Taylor is National Head of Counter-Terror Policing at Scotland Yard.
The attacker has been shot dead by the police. We believe we know their identity, but for safety reasons at the scene, we're unable to confirm at this stage. Three other members of the public are in a serious condition. We have also made two further arrests.
Extra police are being deployed to synagogues across the country in response. Today is Yom Kippur, a day for Jewish people to pray, fast and seek forgiveness. Lauren Bell-Cross is a correspondent for the Jewish Chronicle.
Look, a lot of the Jewish community is going to be very, very fearful right now. The past 2 years have seen some of the highest incidents of anti-Semitism. This incident was shocking, but I do mean this very sadly, I don't think a huge amount of us are very surprised this has happened. I think a lot of us were very, very fearful that it was only a matter of time before an incident like this happened.
Elsewhere, England's former Children's Commissioner says the government should apologise to young people for avoidable mistakes during the pandemic. And Longfield's told the COVID inquiry that children were overlooked by ministers and their needs were frequently ignored. She says policies were harmful and called the closing of schools shambolic. Baroness Longfield says the effects are evident.
Autism referrals up 300%, mental health now twice as prevalent than 2017, and 50% increase in children who have been referred to social services because of child criminal exploitation.
The Health Secretary is launching an urgent review into the vetting process for foreign doctors. It's after the Times revealed that doctors who have been banned from practicing abroad are working in the NHS. The investigations reporter at the Times, George Greenwood, told us about one doctor called Sujan Thyagaraj.
He was suspended in New Mexico and eventually revoked, his license revoked, because he had sex with a patient in the appointment in which he prescribed her a powerful opioid and fled the country after the police came to collect his DNA. But the GMC did not spot him and the hospital did not spot him. And until very recently, he was working, according to the GMC, at Bradford NHS Trust.
Hackers who demanded a ransom from a nursery chain before posting photos and data of some children have apologised. The Radiant Group asked for £100,000 in Bitcoin from kiddo schools. But after a backlash, they now say they've deleted the hacked information of 8,000 children. And new research suggests the human brain reaches its peak after the age of 55. A paper in the journal Intelligence concludes that gains in knowledge and experience outweigh losses in memory and speed between the ages of 55 and 60. For a news bulletin when you want it, search for the Times News Briefing on any podcast platform.
Across the UK, on DAB, online, and on your smart speaker, John Pienaar on Times Radio Drive with Barclays Corporate Banking.
Hello, I'm John Pienaar with Drive on Times Radio. Thanks for joining me. It was horrifying. It was shocking, as attacks like the Manchester outrage always will be. Shocking, but maybe not truly wholly surprising, given the conflicts and the tensions that fill our news bulletins, even if not most of our everyday lives here in what is still, thankfully, a largely peaceful country. The nature of this attack, the controlled explosions afterwards, it all suggests more might have been killed and injured had the attacker not been stopped, had he not been shot. Though for the loved ones of the victims, the loss was total, and our thoughts go out to them. In a moment, the latest news and reaction for you to the attack at the Heaton Park Synagogue. The Prime Minister, who returns suddenly from a gathering of European political leaders in Copenhagen to chair an emergency meeting in Whitehall, said that synagogues across the country will be given extra police protection. Inevitably, synagogues, Jewish faith schools and communities will inevitably be feeling that bit less safe now. And I'll be talking to Jewish community members and to the leaders about that on today's programme. And coming up, I'll be talking to Nigel Tobias, a member of the board of the Jewish Representative Council in Manchester, and to a Labour MP who chairs the all-party parliamentary group against anti-Semitism. As the Prime Minister convenes a Cobra meeting to discuss the attack, Times Radio's political editor will be joining us too to get us right up to date. I wonder what is on your mind now. Do tell me. Send me a text, 87222, start with the word Times, retweet to @TimesRadio. Now, a bit later on, I'm going to be getting you up to date too with the government's plans to further tighten the right of access to Britain for the families of successful asylum seekers. First, though, I'm going to go straight to our top story. Two people are dead, three are injured after a car and knife attack outside a synagogue in Manchester this morning. The suspect has been confirmed dead after being shot by the police. The Metropolitan Police say they believe they know the identity of the attacker. And in the last few minutes, the Greater Manchester Police issued a statement. And here is the Chief Constable, Sir Stephen Watson.
First and foremost, my thoughts and those of my officers and staff are with the families of the loved ones who have been affected by today's horrific incident on what is the Jewish community's holiest day, Yom Kippur. This attack has been officially declared as a terrorist incident, and the investigation is now being led by counter-terrorist police.
Manchester Chief Constable Sir Stephen Watson. Now, the Metropolitan Police have held a news conference, and here's the Assistant Commissioner, Lawrence Taylor.
Counter-terrorism policing has declared this as a terrorist incident. Our specialist teams are now leading the investigation into what happened at Heaton Park Hebrew Congregation Synagogue and working closely with Greater Manchester Police. As we do this, those who have been killed and injured are at the forefront of our minds.
Lawrence Taylor of the Metropolitan Police. Now, two people have been arrested in connection to the incident, which happened during the holiest Jewish holiday, Yom Kippur. The Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, was at a summit of European leaders in Copenhagen when the news broke, and he spoke to the media before leaving to return to the UK.
The attack in Manchester this morning is absolutely shocking, and all of our thoughts are with those affected. I'm on my way back to London. When I arrive, I will chair an emergency COBRA meeting. I'm already able to say that additional police assets are being deployed to synagogues across the country, and we will do everything to keep our Jewish community safe. I've spoken to Mark Gardner of the CST and Andy Burnham, Mayor of Manchester, and I want to thank the emergency services for the speed of their response.
Keir Starmer. The King says he and the Queen are deeply shocked and saddened to learn of the horrific attack in Manchester, especially on such a significant day for the Jewish community. And the Manchester Mayor, Andy Burnham, he spoke after the attack.
It is a serious incident, I have to say, but at the same time I can give some reassurance immediately to people that the immediate danger appears to be over. And Greater Manchester Police have dealt with it very quickly and has been amazing support from, I think, members of the public and security at the